Hi, I'm Donal O'Donoghue. I'm a kidney doctor in Salford in Manchester, and I'm the National Clinical Director of Kidney Care in England. Welcome to this Skype chat. Joining me on the chat this evening is Linda Chesney. We're going to talk about the recent tolvaptan trial in autosomal polycystic kidney disease. Very interesting results. What are the implications? What are we telling our patients? How are we interpreting the study? How generalizable is it? So I think one of the at the ASN, the tolvaptan trial was the trial to talk about. Interesting results, positive benefit in terms of slowing down the rate of progression of kidney disease, also reduction in the rate of growth of the kidney size. How do you interpret those findings? Well, how are you going to change your practice in clinic, Linda?
Well, that's a really good question. And just to introduce myself, I'm of course Linda Sezik, immediate past president of the National Kidney Foundation, which we jokingly refer to as the used president, and a kidney doctor here in North Carolina. The findings are fabulous. I think, first of all, I'd like to say that I think the study is very well done. We've had a more than just a rash, we've had a Stevens-Johnson syndrome of negative trials in nephrology since the 1990s. And methodologically, I think we've learned a lot. Clearly, this is a very well done trial with the vast majority of the patients making it to the end, giving us interpretable data with very good compliance. So I think that there's a lot that can be said from this. I worry that the casual reader will underestimate the importance of this trial by just looking at the numbers. Now, remember, very large numbers of patients that were followed for a period of about 3 years. And the difference in the kidney growth size was statistically significant. The difference in the decrement in kidney function was statistically significant. But when you look at the actual numbers, the difference was about 1 milliliter per minute per year difference in the decrement in creatinine clearance. And superficially, that may seem small, and I would hate for the casual reader to not really see the importance of this trial. Was this at all discussed during the ASN?
So I think there was a lot of discussion about the dropout rate and the tolerability of tolvaptan. There was less discussion than I think there will be in the literature afterwards about the control group and the relatively mild progression in the control group, and that may well relate to the advice to remain well hydrated. That if you look at the symptoms of from drinking, the symptom profile in the placebo group was similar to the tolvaptan group. And it raises that question of is it the tolvaptan, is it the receptor blockade, or is it the switching off of ADH via high fluid input, which opens another set of questions. But I think if you look at the, I mean, to my mind, this trial just opens a new era of the management of polycystic kidney disease, and it's the first in a number of trials, and that's great news for the kidney community, great to have positive trials, fabulous news for patients and families with polycystic kidney disease, but raises a whole series of questions that we don't yet have the answers to. I think what is striking is the rate of progression in the in the active group. So in the active group, if we had that rate of progression over the decades towards end-stage kidney disease, then a big difference would be made. So of course we don't have the long-term studies yet, but we're set up to begin those experiments or begin collecting that data, maybe in registry type information, because the ability to run a trial over 2 or 3 decades clearly would be a real challenge to the system. So I'm like you, I'm less worried about the fact that the difference is relatively small from a superficial view, because the study was well set up. It used the CRISP kidney volume size, which is, again, it's been well worked through methodologically, and it demonstrated a clear separation in the active group from the placebo group, despite a nearly 20% or a 20% about dropout rate in the active group, which, you know, perhaps is to be expected for medicines that are going to make you pee so much.
I love that. You know, I think that those points all come together to give us the idea that maybe the next set of questions really need to focus on subgroups, because clearly you have to get a study done in order to do patients good. So a large number of patients with a smaller follow-up time is practically the perfect way to go. But this difference of 1 cc per minute per year over 3 years doesn't seem like a heck of a lot, but there might be subgroups that are really going to be benefited based on the information that we have here. And I think that that's important, because at some point someone is going to raise the limited resources in the healthcare bucket, the healthcare economic bucket, and the provision of these medications over prolonged periods of time. And I think the research questions and then the clinical questions that we as a healthcare community need to face are, who are the people that these data really suggest will benefit from long-term tolvaptan? What can we say right now? And that might guide our clinical decisions as well as the research agenda in this particular area. In your read of the article, Donna, what were your thoughts about which subgroups would be most attractive for you to treat?
So, I mean, I think in terms of the biology, I think that the people with the larger kidneys, I think that people that have already got hypertension, hopefully it's adequately treated. And I'd also look at family history and, you know, the age at which, you know, family members have developed end-stage renal failure. I think that's a good guide. I think there's a whole series of additional legitimate scientific questions in terms of the characteristics of the people who will want to comply with the therapy. There's the healthcare costs of, you know, lifelong tolvaptan. And that's going to be a high cost whilst it's on patent, and probably a lesser cost, or considerably lesser cost, maybe, you know, in not so many years' time. But where it's a real waste is when it's been prescribed and not taken, because people, you know, can't tolerate it, but maybe don't want to disappoint the doctor in having, you know, been honest about that. So I think there's an issue about letting patients know what the impact of a medicine like this would be on their the frequency with which they've got to go to the bathroom, and the likelihood that they'll be up at night, and whether or not they'll wished to embark on that, and if they do, what are the strategies that we can use to encourage people to stay the course. So I think we can use, you know, a whole range of media and support through the new technologies, as well as traditional ways of encouraging. What does it mean in terms of who should get an MRI scan of their kidneys? Mm-hmm. How frequently should we do that? You know, just thinking in terms of enrolled patients in a program of care around tolvaptan, how frequently would they wish to see the results, to know if they're doing well, and what's the risk that, you know, there's little change in an individual patient over that period of time, and they'll get a bit disappointed with the, well, it's not really making that much difference. If you plot those lines out, you know, if you plot those lines out to, you know, significant renal impairment and they stay along the trajectory they're on, then, you know, even this modest but highly statistically significant reduction in mm-hmm. rate of progression would translate into, I've not done the calculation, but would translate into years, if not decades, of, you know, reasonable kidney function, which mm-hmm. has enormous cost saving and as well as big implications for the individual.
True. And we're all aware of how incredibly motivated this particular segment of the population who has kidney disease really are, how educated they are, how they reach out and use the internet and other social media to get additional information. It's going to be very important to educate them and help them get to this technology. As I was yeah. reading this article, I was struck and I'm thinking about the membranous literature about the people with a greater degree of proteinuria were more likely to progress. The fact that you have progressed means that you're more likely to progress, that truism, that this really is those people that have progressed. They've got the larger kidneys. The presence of hypertension, perhaps as a marker for increased parenchymal disease, have a slight, very subtle suggestion of a greater benefit, not statistically significant, but pretty consistent and a subtle suggestion of it. And as you talk about patient expectations, you know, that could be very important, that maybe those people that don't have the larger kidneys, just be counseled that the natural history of their particular disease, their mutation, may not be as aggressive, and they may not see a tremendous, I guess, benefit. But how would they know? They'd see stable kidney function.
Yeah. So I think, so we need to work out what are the protocols to mm-hmm. identify and manage people. Clearly, blood pressure control that we've been, you know, had on our agenda. But perhaps if we're honest, I think certainly in the UK, we haven't identified everybody with polycystic kidney disease mm-hmm. as early as we might, partly for the legitimate reason that disease labeling will have an impact on you know, perhaps occupational chances and insurance and mortgages and so on and so forth for what gain other than blood pressure control, which maybe we would anticipate would be achieved anyway. But I think there's also been a reluctance to say this is a condition that we should have cascade screening for. And you know, it's very disappointing that every year in every single kidney unit in the UK, we have at least one and probably between one and five people who arrive with advanced chronic kidney disease, who have a family history, who have a known family history of polycystic kidney disease. So mm-hmm. so the opportunities to intervene, we're missing those, and maybe this will be a stimulus for us to say, well, hey, we've got specific treatments. We have to, I think, ethically have the dialogue with people about what those treatments might mean, even mm-hmm. though we've got lots of uncertainty there. And we've got a treatment, you know, we'll have the mTOR inhibitor trials coming through, but with tolvaptan, we've got a treatment. Yes, it does have an effect on urine volumes, I'll say, rather than a side effect. But its side effect profile, you know, is reasonably tolerable. It's, mm-hmm. it's far different than, you know, the side effect profile we might expect with, you know, treatment of membranous nephropathy.
You know, when you said this is a new era, I don't think that you could have been more right, actually, now that I really think about it. Definitely in the UK, but even more so in the US with Obamacare. A friend of mine said there's still a lot of discussion and controversy about Obamacare, but I always have to get in my one sort of semi, did she really say that joke procession. And a friend of mine said to another person that they were arguing about Obamacare, well, what do you call Obamacare now? And the guy looked at him and said, I don't know. And he said, the law, which was really neat. But, you know, the toward not being penalized for a pre-existing condition in healthcare, that in combination with now the fact that we've got a disease-specific therapy for people with polycystic kidney disease, the only thing that we now have to tackle is really the life insurance issue. All of those conversations that I'm remembering for having over the last 10 to 15 years of you've got polycystic kidney disease, you could screen your children, but why don't we just watch their blood pressure and do all of the non-specific things that we would do operating under the assumption that they also had it, but not label them with it. I think now in the new era of the law, Obamacare, and you know, the not having the pre-existing condition and a disease-specific therapy, I think here in the States, we're going to have to rethink our approach to our concerns about diagnosing early disease.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting perspective. And so for in the UK perspective, then people wouldn't be disadvantaged from a healthcare perspective in knowing they had polycystic kidney disease. In terms of access to therapy, but they might be disadvantaged if they carry a psychological burden with that. And
true.
I think, as an aside, in that there's been a lot of noise in the system about labeling of CKD and all the negative effects of that in the general population, which hasn't been substantiated by evidence one way or the other. People just haven't done the studies. And my prejudice there in the general CKD population is that most individuals already have other disease labels, and it's not a, you know, going from a state of health to a state of unhealth. And clearly with polycystic kidney disease, neither is it going from a state of health to a state of unhealth, but it has far more implications than the generality. And I think we need to explore the characteristics of the patients who benefit and those who don't, who might come to some harm from the label, even though we've got treatments, because it's not going to be a one size fits all. But isn't it a fabulous era to be entering into, to think we can set up the studies to answer the questions that in 5 and 10 years time we will know so much more about the population, and it won't be, you know, the end in sight is really slowing the disease progression down so much that people will, you know, live a full life and die with cysts in their kidney, but not with a decade or however long on renal replacement therapy. I think that's it's a testament to all the hard work and effort of the Tempo researchers and the polycystic kidney disease community, the third sector, the charitable community that in the UK has been a real force for pushing government into supporting research and in convening research meetings and asking very, very taxing questions about how we will tackle this very, very important disease area.
Yeah. And in your honor, my English friend, I raise my cup of tea to dying with cysts in your kidney, but not having to live with a graft in your arm.
Yeah.
So for Donal O'Donohue, I'm Linda Sezek, and I want to thank everyone so much for joining us again on this Skype chat. We've reviewed the recent Tempo study on tolvaptan in polycystic kidney disease and are both absolutely thrilled at both the clinical as well as the potential policy implications of this very well-done study. Thanks again for joining us.
Bye for now.